Welcome to this special live edition of the Making Sense podcast, Why Investing Got Weird in 2025. Because if things felt a little off to you this year, you certainly were not imagining it. Look, AI took off like a rocket, crypto face planted, KiwiSaver suddenly political, and interest rates are moving, but they're not really helping as much as we'd hoped. So today we are cutting through the noise to ask what has actually changed, what just looked dramatic, and how do you use this information so that your money feels more in control? Welcome to the Making Sense podcast. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. And I'm Frances Cook. I am your host of this podcast, but also financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. If you do like this webinar, then you're also going to love my newsletter. It's the Market Memo. More of this, a tidbit in your inbox each week to help you understand the share market, start investing with confidence. And you can find that on my website, which is francescook.co.nz/invest. So francescook.co.nz/invest. But for now, let's not waste time. Let's get into things. Don't forget, you can drop those questions in. Let's make the most of that time where we are live together and chatting. I love this. We've got people from Wellington, Palmerston North, Sydney, more Wellington. So you're here. Let's chat. Make sure you're sounding off in the comments. Let's talk about things. Now, I will introduce the panel any moment, but first, a really quick disclaimer. This isn't, can't be, unfortunately, individual financial advice. Everything we talk about here is general information. And from there, you'll need to adapt it to your own individual financial situation. If you would like someone to give you individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet. All right, let's get into it. Let's bring out our wonderful panel. First off, we have Stuff Money editor Damien Venuto. Hi, Damien. Welcome in. Look, he's been covering the biggest stories this year. Every time I see one of your headlines pop up, I always know it's going to be a must read. So thank you so much for coming on, Damien. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Frances.
We also have the wonderful, speaking of financial advisors, Advice First's Leon Leonardo. Now, he is in it up to his elbows every day. He's helping real clients navigate all of these issues. Super passionate about the topics we're diving into today. So very excited to have you with us. Both of you just well across these issues. Let's jump in. Damien, I'm going to start with you. I have had people sending me masses of questions about AI. It feels like it's been one of the biggest money stories of 2025. Why?
It almost feels like a cliche now that you cannot have a conversation, whether you're around the barbecue, whether you're dropping your kids off at the swimming pool for a quick swim. Everyone is talking about AI. And I think part of it comes down to the fact that you have so many big companies making so many big bets on AI right now. And so much of our economy and the global economy feels tied into this one issue. And you just have to wonder, like, is it a good bet? Is it a bad bet? Is it a bet that might just fizz out, not go anywhere? What's going to happen in this space? And I think when you look at things like the S&P 500 right now, and you have a concentration of 10 companies accounting for 40% of the value of that index, you're talking about a massive influence. And if you look at across those 10 companies, they're all making relatively similar bets on AI. So if they're wrong, that's going to have a big impact on the entire market.
Well, exactly. And there's been so much talk about whether or not AI might actually be a bubble. First of all, do you think there's any truth to the bubble talk? And does that change anything about how investors and regular people who are just trying to make the most of their money, how should we look at it?
Look, everyone's saying that it feels very much like a bubble right now. And if it's not a bubble, it's definitely overvalued. Mm-hmm. So I read a report recently from a group of different financial experts. They generally agree that we will see a correction to the tune of around 10 to 15% in 2026. When that happens is anyone's guess. my take on these things is that I've never been one to try and time a market. I don't think that that's a good approach. It's kind of, you need to kind of think about your longer term plan. And I know that that comes from a position of privilege, though, because I have, let's say, another 20 years that I can ride out that correction. If you're a bit closer to the end of your runway, you probably need to think about where your money is sitting, because if experts are saying that a correction is on the cards, it's something that you probably should be listening to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of then, Leon, what do you think about what's happening in AI at the moment? And particularly, do you think there's anything that's maybe a little misunderstood about it?
As Damon mentioned earlier, S&P 500 is getting incredibly concentrated, and it's now like a huge bet to AI. But one thing that's not mentioned frequently is these companies that dominate the S&P 500 are earning a heck of a lot of money. Google alone earned $100 billion in the past quarter. So that's, they're funding their AI from their cash flow, well, AI investments from their cash flow and not so much from debt at the moment. So yeah, they're investing into the future, hoping that they'll win and dominate that AI race in the future. And, you know, not everyone will be the winners in the future, but there's exciting, well, there's growth and investment that they want to be the one that will dominate that market.
Well, it is very much. I've seen it talked a lot about being a bit of a race. And that really is the feeling, isn't it? That they're all pushing to be the first, to be the best, to be the biggest. When there is these moments, they're trying to become, you know, the Google of search engines. Where you say Google, it means search engine, or the Facebook, you know, that means social. So there is that push to become that dominant brand, even if there are competitors, right? I mean, as you've both said, stocks have been exploding off the back of this, and tech has been the engine room behind the stock market, I feel. Have clients been mentioning anything to you about this, Leon? And do you have any tips on how the average person can approach this, make the most of it?
Yes, so they have expressed concern that tech has been had this amazing run. And our main focus is to be diversified, not just be heavily invested in tech. Mm-hmm. It's good to have that exposure there. But if, tech has had a great run this year, but if you look at it in the past few months, tech hasn't been the dominant one. The past 3 months, healthcare has returned 14%. Past 6 months, consumer discretionary, healthcare, communication, and financials all have delivered 10% or more returns. So it's good to kind of not have all your eggs in one basket and just have exposure to a broad set of assets and sectors.
Yeah, actually, Leon, on that, I've heard so many people talking healthcare as well. That is the other one that I have heard so much enthusiasm about. As we head towards 2026, do you think that's another sector to keep an eye on?
That's definitely another sector that we're excited about. You know, you may have heard of Wegovy, Ozempic. Wegovy recently became available here in New Zealand. And, you know, there's the benefits, and also there's concerns of how it would affect. But the benefits of, you know, just preventing obesity, helping solve diabetes problems, then I think there's a lot of opportunity for gains there.
Francis, on the flip side of that, I've just read a report saying that the health inflation rate in New Zealand is through the roof. It was running at 17% last year. It's set to run at 18% in 2026. So you're looking at the cost of health insurance and all these things that are incorporated into our monthly spending just increasing. So these are things that we should be worried about. And as profitable as those industries are, there is also a hit that consumers are going to be taking on the other side, because somebody has to pay for those profits.
Okay, so you've seen a report that's basically like, yes, healthcare is making a lot of money, and maybe if you're an investor, that can be an opportunity. If you're a consumer, you might be seeing costs going up. Be aware of that.
Yeah, so in 2026, the the cost of insurance is looking to set to rise, health insurance is looking set to rise at about 18%. And that's based on the trend of inflation across the New Zealand market. Now, the New Zealand market's inflation when it comes to healthcare inflation is running at twice as high as Asia Pacific. It's well above the OECD average. These are factors that we really need to think about. And a lot of it comes down to the fact that people don't have as much trust in our public healthcare system at the moment. So things that people used to rely on for the public healthcare system, they're now putting into their insurance. And you even have GPs that are recommending, if you need certain diagnostics, if you need certain tests, why don't we just tap into your health insurance? You're more likely to get to the front of their queue.
Wow, that is fascinating. And this is the thing as well, because there's all sorts of knock-on impacts as well. You know, before, Leon, when you were saying about the weight loss drugs as they are becoming more popular and more available, and they are, these companies are obviously making a lot of money as more people use them. And it's, I also saw a report on that recently where it's having an impact on companies like Nestle, where their snacks and their ice creams, the sales are down. So there's knock-on impacts all over the place here. So I think anytime you see these trends, it's having a little think to yourself, right? Of, you don't necessarily have to be an analyst to think, where else will this impact? And, you know, what else could this hit? And you can have a little think about that even as you're just going through the world as a normal person. Damien, one impact I would have thought, we were talking AI before, with all the AI and tech enthusiasm, I would have thought that that would just feed into things like crypto going well. But we've seen it bouncing all over the place. Quite a bellwether with Bitcoin, lost over 30% value this month. That was over $1 trillion wiped out. What's going on with crypto? For those who like to dabble, what should they know?
Francis, I don't often do this, but maybe we should just have a moment of silence for everyone who invested in Fartcoin, because they would have seen, I think, about 95% of their value wiped out since that meme coin exploded. And I think, I mean, Fartcoin is a very extreme example, but it does point to the ongoing volatility. I remember a few years ago, a bunch of people were trying to tell me that crypto was going to be the new gold. It was going to be the safe haven investment of the future. That has not come to fruition at all. What we've seen instead is that volatility has continued. And at this period where people feel a little bit afraid, you see the gold prices ticked up over the course of the last year. Leon will be able to confirm the numbers, but they've been really impressive. Gold is sitting at above $4,000 earlier this year. Not 100% sure where it is right now, but that still exists as a safe haven. Crypto is volatile. Any investment specialist that you talk to will tell you that if you invest in crypto, you're going to have to expect those big ups, those big downs. If you don't expect a 30% swing, you're not being honest about what crypto is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think, you know, if you're interested in it and you want to dabble, go for it. It's your money, but absolutely know what you're getting into there. It is one for those who've got a strong stomach. I mean, Leon, do you have clients interested in crypto, and do you think of it as a legitimate investment?
Well, I do. I come across them fairly regularly, but I preface it that I'm saying I'm not an expert on crypto. But having said that, you know, crypto is such a broad thing, as Damon implied earlier. You know, you have meme coins like Fartcoin, and then you have ones that have been more adopted by widely, like Bitcoin and stable coins. Now, there's uses for them that arguably. However, again, you need to have a strong stomach and you need to know its place in your portfolio if you want to incorporate it there. You need to be prepared for those wild swings if you're looking at it. And also, at the same time, you need to know the why you're investing there. Given that, like gold, that it's a safe, as people imply, it's a safe haven. That means you're betting that, you know, the economy is not going to do well. So you're putting something in the safe haven, which may not be as stable as it is.
And I think some of the things we were talking about earlier in terms of insurance and things, just had a commenter in the chat saying, you know, insurance across the board taking up a higher percentage of income and household spending. And she's thinking about stopping insurance and putting it into the family savings pot instead. I mean, I can understand feeling that way. It is really tough. People trying to cut costs wherever they can. I mean, Damien, one of the things is that interest rates have been headed down a bit. That is supposed to help stimulate the economy, get things moving a little bit, increase confidence. But it does still feel really unhappy out there. And even though we've had the interest rates heading down, we've actually seen several banks now putting mortgage rates up. So, Damien, what's going on? Is there hope on the horizon for 2026?
So the interesting thing about this is that it's a reminder that the OCR plays a role when it comes to those interest rates, but it's not the be-all and end-all. Quite often, the comments that the Reserve Bank makes around an OCR decision have a bigger influence on what happens to those fixed rates down the line, because those are priced in before. So the comments that the Reserve Bank made last time we had an OCR decision in November suggested that the easing cycle, the downward trend with interest rates, was all over. We've just lost some lights in the studio, but don't be alarmed, it's okay. Those interest rates, all indications were that we'd reached the end of that easing cycle. The reality, however, is that what we've now seen in the last week is the Reserve Bank governor saying maybe those comments weren't quite received in the way that they were initially intended. We feel that the market has overreacted and that we need to take a more cautious approach when it comes to raising those interest rates. So it's basically the Reserve Bank governor backpedaling on the comments that were made previously in order to correct the market, because they feel that the market's moving too quickly in terms of pushing those interest rates up again. And the suggestion that we will have interest rate hikes as early as July in 2026 now don't look as certain as what they did maybe 2 weeks ago, which, I mean, if anything, it's a reminder that you really need to look at the comments that are being flung around between bank economists and between the Reserve Bank at the moment, because there does seem to be this debate that's playing out in the public sphere about where are interest rates sitting right now, where are they going to go in the near future, and where should they go? Because if the economy is not recovering quickly enough, then we can't have interest rates trickling upwards again.
From the people that you speak to, because you're in that fabulous position of talking to lots of people all the time and sort of distilling down all this information from various sources. So from the various people you've talked to, what do you get as the impression of what could be happening with interest rates, cost of living, and the economy into 2026 next year? Bearing in mind, I'll put the disclaimer on there for you, everyone's crystal ball is a little bit wonky.
Okay, so the Kiwi Bank economist, Sabrina Delgado, that I spoke to on Friday last week, she suggested that house prices, for instance, have been going sideways. And the recent data that came out yesterday suggested that's continued. She did predict that house prices will probably tick upwards to the tune of around 2-3% in the coming year. Now, that's miles off what we saw previously when we had those 10-15% hikes in house prices year on year. She says that time is over. So putting all your investments into property right now, your return is going to be very, very moderate if the forecasts are to be believed. The other thing that I always find interesting is looking at consumer confidence, because if people feel confident, that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy quite often. If people are willing to spend, it's better for business, and then the economy trucks along a bit better. So Westpac has just released a report suggesting that depending on where you live in New Zealand, your vibe is going to be very different. If you're living in Auckland, you're feeling pretty good right now. You feel that the economy is going to tick up in 2026. Consumer confidence is on an upward trajectory. If you're living in Wellington, you may as well be living in a different country, because the mood over there is just dour. It is tremendously bad. The most interesting thing in this report is that if you separated men and women in terms of consumer confidence, men are far more optimistic right now than women. The interesting thing about that is that women are often more responsible for finances. So there is a chance that women have a more objective view on what's happening in household finances than men.
Hmm. That's fascinating stuff. Okay, well, Leon, what have you seen in terms of forecasts on this, and how would it impact the choices people might make with their money right now?
Well, there's still a lot of pain out there right now, but yeah, the consumer confidence has been rising, as well as the business confidence has been rising. We're hoping that recovery is on the way, but it might still need some catalysts. We still need a little bit more certainty, especially since it's an election year next year. We don't know what changes could be adopted, but also we don't know what the stimulus would be for the businesses, what the coming government would have.
Okay. So does this impact the investment choices people might make, or is it sort of a, you just kind of stick to your plan and as new information comes in, you just make the best choices you can?
Well, it depends on your situation. Some people are approaching retirement sooner, so that's when we need to pivot. My philosophy is we don't risk what we need for what we want. So you kind of make a provision for something that, okay, you're retiring sooner. So we de-risk some assets. That way we have certainty that you have this amount of income coming through for when you retire in the next few years. And then have this portion of your portfolio geared towards longer term growth. And we're not planning on touching that anytime soon. That way we get the benefits from, you know, pleasant surprises, but also not react to negative surprises by selling it off because we need the money right now.
Francis, one thing that is quite interesting that's happened in recent months is that we've seen a return of property investors to the market. Now, obviously, coming up to election 2026, one of the big debates that we're going to see is capital gains tax. And I would be very curious to see what happens to those property investors as that debate boils along and we see whether we're leaning toward National or Labour and who is in the best position to run a coalition government come 2026.
Okay. It will be fascinating to see. Speaking of the election issues, I was fascinated that the very first election promise we got was related to KiwiSaver. To me, like, I know I'm a bit biased, I know I'm a bit of a money nerd, but I looked at that and I thought, that feels like a real sign of where we're at, that politicians are picking up on the financial anxieties people are facing, that they are trying to respond to it now, whether or not they're making the promises that people actually want to hear, that's a whole nother question. The mere fact that this is the first promise and this is clearly a priority to the politicians, that seems really interesting to me. So Damien, do you think that we will see more on things like KiwiSaver?
I think we have to, Francis, because when you look at the Retirement Commission's recent report, they basically gave us a runway of around 10 years to solve this problem because our current reliance on superannuation is becoming too expensive. Now, a lot of people will tell you, oh, we can just increase the age. What that does, it just kicks the can a little bit further down the road because fundamentally what's happening is that as our population ages, we are becoming more reliant on a smaller group of workers to cover the cost of that. So Your workers are the ones who pay your tax, and then that tax is then handed over to people who retire. Now, that's a good thing in a country. You want your country to have a moral compass and to look after its elderly. The problem, however, is that we have so many people now putting down their oars on this giant lifeboat that we call New Zealand. We have so many people putting down their oars, having a sunbathe, having a relaxing time, and we have fewer people paddling. And that's part of the problem. So as that happens, we need to think about different ways that we adjust our retirement system in order to make it sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely. Leon, what do you think? Do you think we need more different changes on KiwiSaver? What would you like to see in this space that would actually respond to the needs of people that you're dealing with?
I think we definitely need more incentives to contribute to KiwiSaver. KiwiSaver has grown a lot in the past few years, but from what we see, the growth in KiwiSaver was mostly from returns, not contributions. If more people contribute, we'll see more of those returns, and that those returns will be in their pocket for when they retire and when they need it. There's plenty of levers, too, that we can pull. You know, our contribution levels in KiwiSaver here in New Zealand pale in comparison to what they have across the ditch. They're also taxed differently across the ditch. Like they're taxed 15% for their super contributions across the ditch, while we have our different levels. And that's just more money in our pocket if we're taxed a little bit differently over the long term. And that money would continue to grow over the long term if it's formed through that. But also at the same time, you still have some inequality in the contribution levels between men and women. So there's still something that can be done, especially if, say, more incentives for contributing or adding to a contribution for someone who's on maternity leave, or for self-employed people having more incentives for contributing there.
Leon's comments there on the difference between Australia and New Zealand are significant. So if you're 65 years old today, you would be walking away with a KiwiSaver of around $65,000. In Australia, if you're 65 years old, your Australian super, which is the equivalent of KiwiSaver over there, would be worth around 480,000 New Zealand dollars. Now, you're talking about a $400,000 gap. And what that means is that you have a lower reliance on the pension scheme in Australia, which again, if you look at the cost of Australia's pension, at the moment, it's about the same level as the cost of super in New Zealand in terms of a percentage of GDP. So you're talking about 5% of GDP. However, the Australian system is becoming cheaper over time, whereas ours is becoming more expensive as a percentage of GDP.
Okay, there's a lot of food for thought there. And I particularly, I very much agree with the points you both make, but Leon as well, what you were saying there about the self-employed. Now, that might be a little bit of self-interest there, but I do think we could do a lot more to look after self-employed, particularly if we're trying to encourage a better business environment in New Zealand. So many of the businesses in New Zealand are sole traders or very small. Surely we should be doing more to look after those people. So I think that's a really good point. One of the other things as well, in terms of big changes happening in New Zealand, open banking now in force. Now, to be fair, New Zealand very much behind the rest of the world on this, but hey, at least we've got it now. So Damien, this is one of those technical changes that I think it slid under the radar a bit. And yet I think it could impact so many parts of our money lives and really have this really wide ripple effect. What do you think will be the biggest impacts now that open banking has come into force?
I'm super excited about this because it's a bit nerdy, but it comes down to who owns your data. Now, historically, the person who looked after your data, so your bank, would be in control of the data and they would determine who uses it. So what they did is they put it into a silo and they protected it and no one else could see it, which is good for security. There's nothing wrong with it. But what's happened now is that the laws changed and said, well, actually, we don't think that's fair. We think that the person who owns the data is the person who the data is actually about. So that's you. And so what this law change does, it might seem cosmetic, but it's massive because what you can now do is you can give permission to other institutions, registered, certified institutions, to see the data that your bank holds on you. And what that allows for is for these other organizations to have a look at what's happening with your numbers, what's happening with your money, and then come in and offer advice that might be superior to what your current bank is offering you. And it lends itself to competition like we've never seen before.
Well, exactly. There has been so much talk about whether there's enough competition in New Zealand, particularly between the New Zealand banks. Do you think this will actually have a material impact on that?
I hope so, because right now I wouldn't want to be an underperforming bank, because if I've got let's say you've got your ANZ or your BNZ or your Kiwi Bank app and you've got your money sitting there, if another bank is given permission to see that data and they notice that you perhaps have a lump sum money that's sitting there being eaten away by inflation, there's nothing from stopping them from saying, hey, we notice that you have this lump sum of money. Have you thought about doing this and maybe shifting it across to another provider? Or have you thought about perhaps changing your mortgage setup so that you have an offset element, or changing the nature, or just pulling away little bits and pieces in your financial strategy that allow you to be a little bit better with money, that allow you to pay off that mortgage a little bit faster. I think that if we allow the system to go where it could, you're creating an environment where this becomes more possible. The other thing that I really like is that it allows for innovation. I mean, we've seen in Europe already, Revolut is the fastest growing, it's listed as the fastest growing banking institution in the history of Europe, which is fascinating because that's built on open banking.
Exactly. I just think there's so much possibility. I mean, it's always, you have to wait and see how things shake out, right? But there is so much possibility. I often talk about the power of these small changes you can make that stack up on each other. And the way they work together is so much bigger than each little change on its own. This should make it easier to make those little changes, especially things like shopping around, to see little ways you can optimize your money. I'm really, really hopeful. I do hope this one works out well. Leon, when you've been talking to clients throughout this year, what do you think have been some of the biggest lessons your clients have learned through 2025? Is there anything that the rest of us can take from that to help us all do better with money as well?
Yeah. So it's fascinating because I've spoken to a lot of clients earlier this year that were really nervous with what's happening. And then towards the end of the year, we caught up with them. Oh, they're relaxed. They got used to the volatility. This year has been really, well, stressful. There's a lot of up and downs and uncertainty. And it's good that people got used to it. And it's just when you're investing over the long term, part risk and returns are two sides of the same coin. That's sort of why you kind of need to make sure that you have enough time frame to ride out that risk. But also, you know, you don't take on too much risk that you can't stomach. If it's causing you to lose sleep, maybe it's time to scale back on the risk. But also at the same time, if you have a really good plan that you feel comfortable with, and you stick with it, you'll be rewarded with patience. So for example, earlier this year, if people exited out of the market when the tariffs were announced, they would have missed out on the 15% gains that would have that the rest of the year would have offered.
Yeah, exactly. It's often the way that just sticking with your plan, your overall long-term plan, tends to just work out for the best. And isn't that kind of nice that the lazy way is actually the better way? Like, thank God.
Exactly. When in doubt, zoom out. That's the old mantra, right?
100%. Yeah. Okay. We're going to wrap up with some questions for both of you. Leon, I'm going to start with you. As we're heading into 2026, what do you think the average person should focus on as they start the new year if they're wanting to feel a bit more in control of their money?
Sustainability of the habits. If you're saving for investing over the long term for retirement, just keep investing and saving the money that you're not going to touch for that long term. And then, you know, sometimes best thing you could do is just forget the password of your investing account and then just look at it. Just wait for the annual reports and see, oh, it's grown that much. Yeah. Just be patient, consistent. And like you said, do the lazy way. As long as you're moving forward step by step and investing regularly and not trying to time the market, then you could be rewarded handsomely.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's really solid advice. Damien, how about you? As someone's heading into 2026, they're wanting to feel more in control of things. What do you think they should focus on with their money?
The one thing that I've done to feel more in control of my money is realizing that I can't trust myself. I'm probably going to end up buying that really nice pair of Italian football boots or unnecessary ingredients that cost far too much money for the pizza and pasta we make at home. So these are just things that about me that I can't control. So I try and automate these things as much as I can. And just having those automatic payments where they don't even exist to me, like my KiwiSaver contribution has always been higher than the minimum. And it's money that's never existed to me. So you don't even think about it. Same with the savings fund that we've created for my daughter's university fund one day. It's automated, goes directly into Shanzi's account. Don't ever think about it. Doesn't exist to me. When the money doesn't exist to me, your budget will stretch or it'll stretch or contract depending on how much you have available to you. If you don't have enough for those Italian football boots, you probably won't buy them.
Damien, I love it. You're such a cliche, and I say that in the most complimentary way. You've got your life priorities sorted. Look, in,
I am who I am.
Know thyself. It's great. In terms of people thinking investing, because I know a lot of people have got that top of mind, is there an investing trap that you think maybe popped up a little bit this year that we should leave behind us? And I'll start with you this time, Damien.
Okay, so in the coming year, we're going to have a lot of people rolling off of higher mortgage rates and onto lower mortgage rates. That's regardless of the fact that interest rates are going up, because it'll still be lower than what they were a year or 2 years ago. That's going to create the impression that you have a whole lot of extra money that you can spend on whatever rubbish you want to. I think your biggest trap is not putting that money back into paying off capital on your mortgage or investing it elsewhere. I think the risk is that that becomes a discretionary fund that we can now use to treat ourselves after a period where life was a little bit harder. I think that if you make one decision in 2026, as you roll off from that higher mortgage repayment, stick to the same mortgage, and you'll see how quickly that can cut down on the lifetime of that mortgage. It'll be remarkable.
I love that. I love that. All right, Leon, what about you? Do you think there's an investing trap that we saw this year that we should be leaving behind us for 2026?
I think we see it every year. It's timing the market versus time in the market. This year, it's much more prevalent. If you are trying to time, oh, when's the recovery or when's the dip going to happen? Yeah, it's going to be a fool's errand, and it's just going to cost you a lot of money and cost you a lot of stress and heartache. Another thing would be, you know, I go with Warren Buffett's old adage, be fearful when everyone's greedy and greedy when everyone's fearful. But if you automate it, you don't have to think about it, and then you'll already have that time in the market.
Yes, there's never a bad time for a Buffett quote. Love that. Yes. And let's leave things on a nice positive note. What do you think? Are there opportunities waiting for us in 2026? And which opportunities should we be seizing? Leon, how about you?
I think, yeah, I'm just going to steal Damien's idea there where, you know, if you refit your mortgage at a lower rate, you can use that extra income to invest more into the market, invest more into your future, or pay more off your mortgage. But also at the same time, yeah, if you feel that there's something that you can explore that you didn't, like with AI, it's a tool that we could use for the future, and you could learn a little bit more about it and then see, oh, wait, I could monetize this into a small side hustle that I could automate in the future. Then, yeah, you could try and learn that. There's an opportunity there. And there's a lot of things that AI is on tap for, not just for making memes and making anime pictures.
Yeah. Or in between the anime pictures, get some financial chat in there. I will say, I do love that you both mentioned the mortgage, because getting mortgage free, I mean, housing is the biggest cost for a lot of people. And if you've managed to get into a home, great, good work. But if you can pay it off earlier, it's not just getting mortgage free a few years earlier, it's that it saves you hundreds of thousands of dollars that you never pay in the first place. I've got an episode a few weeks back for anyone who missed it. It might be 2 or 3 weeks back, but it's literally just titled Mortgage Hack. So go and look for that, where I run through exactly how far $20 extra got me on my mortgage. And spoiler alert, years of freedom and hundreds of thousands of dollars saved for the sake of $20. So it's super worth doing. Just chuck it into some of those online calculators. You'll be amazed how far you can get. Damien, big opportunity that you think could be waiting for us in 2026, and how should we seize it?
Look, one of the things that has been the toughest over the last year has been the labor market. And it's not even the unemployment rate, because the unemployment rate's been way higher in the past. The tricky thing has been the job finding rate. So if you've found yourself outside of work over the last year, it has been a nightmare to get back in. What's happening is that people are holding on to the jobs that they have, and they're moving less frequently. So what that means is it locks in the salary that you currently have. It locks you into the opportunity that you currently have. My hope is that we see the labor market picking up so that people can look at opportunities that are maybe outside the one that they currently have, so that employers can start bringing in new people, so that we see some competition for talent. Because the single biggest factor when it comes to building personal wealth over the course of a lifetime is the money that you earn, the salary, whether that comes from whether you're self-employed or whether you're employed by another person. It's the money that you earn. So if that's stifled by a labor market that is incredibly tight, it makes it a lot harder to grow that element of your personal wealth as you're going along. So my hope is that in 2026, we see that labor market opening up a little bit. We see new opportunities come in, and we see people moving and new job opportunities being created.
I would love to see that as well. I often talk to people about, you know, they ask me about investing and they say, what's the best first investment? And it's your income. So that I would love to see that labor market getting a bit healthier. I very much hope you're right. Thank you both so much for the wonderful insights and for your analysis of what's going on. I think you're sending off 2025 really well for us. And here's hoping that those nice things happen in 2026. Stuff Money editor, Damian Venuto, Advice First financial advisor, Leon Leonardo. Really appreciate both of you taking the time. Now, if this session was helpful to you, first of all, hit subscribe wherever you're listening to the Making Sense podcast. Secondly, send it on to a friend so that we can all level up our money together. Until next time, have a lovely Christmas. Great rest of your day.
Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.